Welcome to KGVM FM Radio 95.9 in Bozeman. A disclaimer before this next episode of Spoken Word here on the Eclectic Elevator Show. KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM does not endorse any candidate for an election. That being said, we welcome Cindy Andrews to our third interview of a series featuring the candidates for mayor of the city of Bozeman, 2023. KGVM Bozeman is community radio broadcasting for the Gallatin Valley, bringing listeners a wide variety of ways to participate and engage in community. Give us your feedback, constructive criticism, or more sources of information that would be of interest to our community. You can email us at info@kgvm.org. That's info@kgvm.org. Our equipment for broadcasting, our studio rent, and our events require funding that we gather from underwriting partnerships and donations from listeners and supporters. Here I am with Cindy Andrews. So Cindy, you have been the mayor of the city of Bozeman for how many years?
Thanks for inviting me in today. I have been on the city commission for several years. I'm ending my second term as mayor.
Okay.
In December, I'll be ending my second term. I've served term and a half as on the city commission, and now I'm into the end of my second term as mayor. The terms are 4 years. We have an interesting system in Bozeman. We have a system that you run for mayor for a four-year term, you serve 2 years as a deputy mayor, and then you serve 2 years as a mayor. And if you run again and are reelected, then you go back to being the deputy mayor for 2 years, and then the mayor for 2 years.
Okay.
Which is a little different system than most places in the country.
About affordable housing to start off with, what kinds of zoning are prioritized in Bozeman since you've been in office?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the question, and there's certainly a lot of questions around affordable housing. So with regard to zoning, we have several different zones that people are able to build in. R1 is single family, and it goes all the way up to R5, and every time the number gets bigger, the zoning becomes a little more intense, or I guess I would call it dense. And then we have some zoning that's like REMU, which is residential emphasis mixed use, so you have residents and then you also have some commercial. I would say that, in the last few years we've really been looking at how our community is growing, and the focus of the commission, really since I've been on the commission, has been talking about infill and density. Mm-hmm. And the idea of single family zoning has really become something that we are not that interested in approving developments that come in now with just that single family residency. So we're looking at how do we really look, how do we build more affordable housing and increase density? So we're looking at areas that are like Remu that have residential emphasis mixed use. As you know, we are looking at updates in our unified development code. And what happened within that process is that we looked at the code and said, you know, how do we make this easier? The whole code, particularly chapter 38, which talks about building and development, how do we make that easier for everybody to understand? Everybody in the commission, the community, the developers, the builders, how do we simplify that code? And we hired a consultant to help us with that goal in hand. How do we actually go about simplifying the code? So their question, one of the questions back to us was, would you like to look at combining zoning districts? And our answer to that question was, yes, we would. So they did exactly what we had asked them to do. They went out, got a lot of public input, and came back with an idea of how to simplify the code in a lot of different areas, as well as how to combine zoning. The idea of combining zoning has gotten a lot of people interested and certainly vocal about the updates. We have not made a decision about combining zoning, but we certainly are interested in what the community is telling us and their impression about what's happening with the combination of the zoning that Code Studios is suggesting we look at. I will just say that right now my impression is that what they're suggesting, at least for me, is a little bit too much. It's a step too far, and we need to think more about the context of each zoning area and as well as our intent to build dense and have infill. So it's more than just density and infill. It's also looking at the context of the area and how does that fit in with the new ideas of zoning and combining zoning. So, for example, it seems to me that R1 and R2 might be able to go together because there's not a huge difference in those two. Mm-hmm. But when you look at adding R3, which is even more dense, mm-hmm. That gives me a lot of pause, and I have a lot that it may be just a step too far for me.
What are citizen-initiated zoning districts?
That is something we do not see very often. It's more, you see that more in the county, and it's one reason why they have so many zoning districts in the county, because there have been a lot of citizen-initiated zoning. The one that comes to my mind in the time that I've been on the commission is probably REMU, which is the residential emphasis mixed zoning that came forward through an architect. And so that was a suggestion. It went through our whole process, meaning that our planning department got together and worked to figure out how that would work. What would the criteria be? How would that look? What would that actually look like? So it wasn't something that, it isn't something that we see very often. But I think in this case with REMU, it's something that's been really successful. And again, I would say that you see that more in the county, and I would imagine if you ask them, they would, I'm not sure if they think that's a successful way to do zoning or not. My guess is maybe not. There was also a bill that was passed in the legislature this last session, Senate Bill 143, that was a referendum.
Senate Bill 143.
Yes. I thought I had a copy of it. I think what it did was to terminate this idea of citizen-initiated zoning. Mm. I'd have to look at that, okay. Look that up for sure. But there is a Senate bill that
143.
It's Senate Bill 143. Did I answer your question about citizen-initiated zoning?
Yes. Yes.
Like I said, we haven't seen much of that in Bozeman. I recall. But
would citizen-initiated zoning districts be necessary for the city and county to coordinate and form a wildlife bridge over the I-90 or the 191? And how would you go about that?
No, it would not be. It wouldn't be necessary. And so the way that I would go about that. Well, let me just back up. The the city has initiated with many, many partners our sensitive land study.
Yeah.
And I've had the good fortune of being able to get up into the air and look at a huge area around Bozeman, look at the topography from the border of Yellowstone National Park, Big Sky, the Gallatin Range, the Bridger Range. And that flight really gave me a good sense of where our sensitive land study would be, and also helped me to see in a way that I couldn't see it from the ground, how these wildlife corridors work, and especially these wildlife overpasses and underpasses. So initiating something like that would be very similar to how we have initiated the sensitive land study, or even I would call it the Trail to the M, where we work with our partners outside our jurisdiction. So mm-hmm. in the case of the sensitive land study right now, we are working with the county. We're working with partners from all around the area that have real knowledge and experience in working with wildlife. And all of that knowledge and experience has come together in our sensitive land study to be able to look at, as we grow, where are those pressures. So everything from fisheries, rivers, creeks, land use, agriculture, all of those partners are together helping us to form the study that we are hopefully going to approve and adopt here really soon. And that would be the same way that I would want to go about doing overpasses or underpasses for wildlife, mm-hmm. working with those partners that we have already established, getting together, thinking about where those make the most sense, particularly I think connecting the Gallatin and the Bridger Range, and where are the roads and that really impact those wildlife corridors, mm-hmm. and then how do we work together to be able to come up with the solutions. So it's about working with those partners, and the one wonderful thing I think is that I have built those partnerships already through my 13 years of being on the city commission, and so it's relatively easy to go out and get this group of people together to say, hey, let's work on this project, especially since we're working on the sensitive land mm-hmm. project already, the sensitive land study.
Interesting.
You know, I think we do that already when we have a development where we actually look at the requirement of open space and parks when we actually do a development. And we also look at as individual projects come in and we have these areas of open space and parks that are dedicated in one development. When we look at another development that's close or perhaps contiguous, then how do we connect those parks or open spaces to make it even bigger mm-hmm. and more accessible for people and dogs and fish, all those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, we already have some of those things in place. The other thing that I think we should be looking at is our stream corridors and our creeks. We have buffer zones, we have setbacks in those areas, but we know that wildlife travel along those corridors. So maybe our next step is a discussion about how we go about enhancing those buffers in those areas where we know that wildlife where we know that they're there and we know that they use those corridors to travel. So that's another thing that I think a good discussion that we might be considering in the future in terms of wildlife habitat and wildlife corridors. And again, connecting those parks and trails and open space when we are looking at these big developments and how they connect to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, let me just add a little bit more too. You know, we've had, for many years, we passed the bond, which was the TOPS plan, the trails, open space, and parks. And so that helped us with projects like the Trail to the M, where we were able to use that money to purchase, you know, various pieces of property along the trail so you could actually hike from the city all the way up to the end. We used that, the TOPS money, along with all of these projects that I'm talking about through the TOPS bond are the city plus other partners. So Gallatin Valley Land Trust, we were able to use some of that money for Story Mill Park and partnering with Gallatin Valley Land Trust, as well as the can't remember the name of the group.
Wild Montana?
No, it was, come back to that. The point is that we've worked with other organizations to be able to purchase and purchase land for the use of parks and trails through a bond that we passed, you know, many years ago. So that is a great way that the city has been able to acquire property and land and then use it for parks and trails.
Oh,
in our community.
And then would some of that property have been part of a private property?
Yes, that was part of the, when the Trail to the End, we had some private property there. And Story Mill Park's another great example of a partnership with the Trust for Public Land, for Gallatin Valley Land Trust, the city, all of us kind of working together there to create that Story Mill Park using those, you know, top funds and other additional dollars. So when it comes to purchasing, you know, if it's not required in a development for open space or parks, then we've used in the past these top bond money to be able to help us purchase more parks and more trails around the city. Another really good example is the soccer complex, the soccer and lacrosse complex on the west side of town. So a lot of really great projects have come about through that TOPS bond and that TOPS money.
Do you have any updates on the Gallatin Health sub-area plan?
Well, what I can tell you about that is we know that getting out into the open and walking and hiking and exercising is good for you. And the I know that the area that is called Highland Glen was a piece of property that was originally owned by the Bozeman Health, has been since acquired by Gallatin Valley Land Trust. It's quite near the hospital there. And they are now prescribing to people the idea that they should go out and into Highland Glen, into this nature preserve, and spend time because they know it's good for mental health and physical health. And I think we all know that.
Oh, yeah.
So that is that's the piece of that I'm understanding and know about. And I think that anywhere you go now, you know, people talk about mental health and physical health, and it's becoming more, I believe, something that when folks look at sort of a holistic approach to your health, that's part of it.
But the city of Bozeman, to my understanding, has forced this Gallatin Health sub-area plan on the hospital more. Of course, community members might already assume that an empty tract of formerly agricultural land would be developed into housing with all the influx of people for different reasons, mostly the climate crisis.
I know that you know, the hospital owns the property that is open there to the east of the hospital, right? And I know where Highland Glen is involved in that. And to my knowledge, that is still private property, and the hospital has yet to decide what they're going to do with it.
Why wouldn't they be developed with more landscaping or more water treatment
to
catch the rain?
Yeah. I mean, that's up to the hospital.
The thing is that we're seeing a lot of old, unutilized agricultural land that may be kind of desolate sitting there for us to look at, even when we all want and need houses. But why not put more landscaping, more parks, more trees, plant native shrubs, plants, before the buildings are thrown up? And
I don't know what their current plans are for that property. That is something that's not come to us, to the commission. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, when it does, I'm happy to take a look at it, discuss it, hear people's comments about it. Mm-hmm. We do have, we are looking at our landscape design and updating some of that to make it more drought tolerant, and really looking at how, you know, taking out turf that is really not needed anymore, replacing it with things that grow better in our area that require less water. Mm-hmm. So we are taking a real good look at that, at those design standards. And every time, once we look at that and we adopt those standards, then every development that comes will be encouraged, or depending on where we are, have to conform to the regulation and the standards in our design guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I think single family home, I think quality of life when I think single family home. I think in Bozeman, we may or may not need bear safe trash containers. Do you hear about any intention for the city of Bozeman to start collecting compost, or some of the updates to our dumpsters that might be bear proof?
So we now offer bear proof garbage cans to people that want them, and they're really focused primarily on areas where we know these wildlife, bears and other forms of wildlife, are going up and down in these corridors. So, but they are available to people. They cost more to get them, but they're certainly available.
That's awesome.
Yep.
The compost.
Oh, yes. We have we are the first city in Montana to be able to combine composting and garbage. We had a big hearing about that, and we have a little more discussion that we are anticipating, but we looked at rates, we've looked at how all of that's going to work. We had a big study that was done, and so really looking forward to rolling out that program.
Neat.
Mm-hmm.
It is disappointing to see photos of the Logan landfill dump with two black bears just laying there dumped. Who is taking care of the mitigation of large predators that wander into our city? What department is that?
That would probably be Fish, Wildlife, and Parks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you engage with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks often in your term?
We don't, we don't engage with them. I don't engage with them on a personal level, but our departments have worked together. They have worked with us on our sensitive land study. Again, I'm sure that they were consulted when we talked about these bear-proof garbage cans, and it may be helping us to understand a little more where we may need to suggest people have them. So they're definitely a partner, but in terms of the personal engagement, like for me on a one-to-one basis, that's not something that we do, you know,
okay,
regularly.
Yeah,
but
I would
say that they're definitely a partner, and when we look at harvesting timber or some of those things that affect our surrounding area, they're definitely somebody that we consult and talk to, and they're a partner.
Cindy, what can you say about a sales tax? Is that something that's going to happen soon?
Well, I'm happy to talk about that. We at the city have been promoting or encouraging a local option sales tax for many years. Every legislative term since I've been on the commission, we have been encouraging a local option sales tax. And to date, it has not been approved. It's something that the legislature has to approve, and they have to approve us being able to put it on the ballot so that people can vote for it. And the legislature has said, no, thank you, we're not interested in doing that. I think part of what I'm hearing around that issue is that should they ever adopt a statewide sales tax, the idea that you have a local option sales tax would somehow interfere with that, or people maybe wouldn't support a complete sales tax if you had a local option sales tax. Many of the ideas around local option sales tax that have been presented to the legislature, many of them from our own legislators here in our district, have included provisions that would a state sales tax be proposed, a local option tax would sunset. So they would not be in conflict with each other. But it's pretty important, in my view, that we have, I would prefer a local option sales tax, because anything we do now, or most everything we do now, falls on the back of property taxes for us to be able to. We have to go back and ask residents. We have to increase the sales, the property taxes for us to be able to carry out some city functions, and that is a burden on the community. I think that we have such a tourist population here. We have so many people coming in to visit Montana and our city in particular, and that they should be carrying some of the weight, because they impact our roads, our water, our sewer. And yet we don't have any way of them being accountable for that. They pay a lodging tax fee when they stay at a motel, but that money goes into promotion, and some of it goes into the general fund. But we have really no way of collecting from these people that visit us mm-hmm. the any kind of revenue that really affects and impacts our services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost this tourist economy.
Yeah.
Topic.
Yeah. There also needs mm-hmm. to be property tax relief in that local option sales tax, so you're not doing a sales tax, you know, and asking for more property taxes. Okay. There has to be a relief there.
Now, short-term rentals could surely be taxed more than your standard rental, or is there an ability to kind of classify?
Well, right now there's no opportunity for that to happen, because the legislature has preempted us from doing anything like that. So you can't charge them more. You can't, for example, have somebody, if you have an empty house, say a house that's just used for short-term rental, you cannot tax them any more than anybody else. So there's a lot of things that the legislature has set in place that really limit what we can do and limit our toolbox.
Interesting.
In terms of whether it's rental because of the landlord-tenant laws, whether it's inclusionary zoning, which was something where if you built, just as an example, if you build 100 houses, 10 of those or 10% had to be affordable, but they took that tool away as well. So mm-hmm. now our tools involve really negotiating and working with builders and developers to listen to what they need, and then help and let them know what we need, and how can we come to agreement where we'll help you with what you need, and you need to help us with what we need, basically, mm-hmm. And that a lot of that happens in annexation agreements. People are annexing into the community.
Oh, wow.
Pieces of property. Yeah.
We're here with Cindy Andrews. This is KGVM Bozeman on our interview for the candidate of Bozeman City Mayor. Annexation, expanding the city limits, right?
Right. That's so annexation. There are, we have what I would call voluntary annexation. So people want to come into the city. There's a piece of property that's not included in the city. They want to come in. They voluntarily annex. We have goals and policies that we look at to see if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, is it contiguous to the city? Does it somehow connect to the city? Is it, our city services? Can we get them city services? There's I think 10 policies and 8 goals that we look at when we think about annexation. We also have pieces of property within the Bozeman city limits that are not currently annexed. They're still county in holdings.
Oh, interesting.
So yes, it expands the boundaries of the city, it could, and it also could include these county in holdings that remain in the city as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, you know, we have always welcomed people into the community.
Let's see. I'd like to know, after the after Ordinance 2147 involving unhoused people, are we involving the police more Or is the city of Bozeman going to have more of a designated like team that would confront these unhoused people every time they need to move? Every time?
No.
No, it's
we
asking
are,
the
so
police.
We are not involving the police more, and I want to make sure that that's really loud and clear.
Yeah.
We are hiring two sort of neighborhood enforcement officers, if you will, or neighborhood, the name's escaping my mind, but we're hiring two people.
On the ground.
That will be on the ground, and their whole focus will be education, really, to let people know kind of what the rules are and where they can get help and where these resources will be provided for them.
Absolutely.
And so it's not about, going in there and trying to do a whole lot more enforcement. That's not it. It is about getting people to understand what the rules will be now when 247 is an ordinance. Mm-hmm. But we've never been focused on like enforcing these things to the extent that we're going to be coming down on them, arresting them, that kind of thing. That's never been our focus. Mm-hmm. Our focus has been about education and trying to help them be able to understand where the resources are that they need, you know, if they're looking to find a job, if they need health services, if they need mental health services, where are these services and how can they attain those services in the city, because they're there, they're available.
A lot
and
of
these
services.
Yes, and these resource officers is what they will be called, I guess, will be able to help them. We are really looking at these resource officers to be able to help these folks get the information and the resources that they need.
It's definitely correlated, mental health and community health with space and adequate habitable land. And so those were some of my primary concerns coming in here today. I wanted to know if there are any events you might like to talk about upcoming in your campaign, or any topics to invite listeners to find out more about.
I just wanted to go back to one thing you said when we were talking about the unhoused and the services. One of the great things we've done in the recent past is to partner with the county on a mobile crisis unit. So when people are in a crisis, in a mental health crisis, we have now a unit that goes out there and can help folks find the resources that they need. They're there. So it's not necessarily police enforcement. It's these people that are there to help with the situation, help offer resources that folks need, take care of them in a way that's not, that's really completely opposite of police mm-hmm. enforcement. And it's been a huge success. And we are so grateful that the county and the medical community have partnered with us to be able to offer this service. So I think that's something people forget. That's there, and it's something that we are really proud of, that the community of Bozeman and, again, the county have worked together to be able to provide that service, because we understand mental health issues are one of the issues that surround the unhoused. And so being able to provide a huge, wraparound service for these folks is another thing that's really important. And that's one of the great things that HRDC is doing with their community commons. They're building that food bank, and they're building additional shelters so that we have a shelter 365 days a year, 7/24, mm-hmm. where people can go and be able to get the help they need, to be able to get food, take a shower, have a place to stay. And that is a big step in our community that we have not had before. And it will also help us to be able to look at the unhoused that are now camped in the right-of-way and offer them a place to go mm-hmm. instead of having to sleep in the street. So I wanted to point that out, because it's being unhoused is not just a single issue. There's a lot of things that are involved with being unhoused.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people You know, they're making decisions every day that you and I don't even ever have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really grateful and pleased at the small step that we took with the Ordinance 2147. It's this, you know, small step to being able to get people into a place where they have a lot more resources available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really grateful to HRDC and all the work that they've done to help us in this arena, as well as our other partners, including, you know, the hospital and the county, and the availability and the opportunity that we've had to do a mobile crisis unit.
Living in a mobile home means you've got to be mobile.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the comments there at the city hall where a woman owns an RV, but she doesn't live in it. And it's like, these are things that, yes, we have to talk about more, where just because you own this and it sits outside of your house doesn't mean it's subject to some profiling.
As I said, the focus of these resource officers will be to help these people understand what resources are there, because I believe a lot of them don't know. They don't understand what we have to offer as a community. And one of the projects that I'd like to see us work on here in the future is really taking a look at our senior center and thinking about reimagining that senior center so that we have an opportunity for not only seniors, but maybe it has a daycare and maybe it has some affordable housing units. And so everybody is working together. The seniors would be with young children. Maybe they could do some babysitting services or mm-hmm. teaching of what they, you know, have
Absolutely.
Known all their life, and all while at the same time offering some affordable housing solutions. The building is old. It needs some repair. We definitely need a senior center, but I think how do we reimagine that to be able to even meet the needs of more people in the community? And that's one of the things, if I'm reelected, that I would really like to focus on and work on.
That's amazing. I used to work at the daycare that was in the senior center, and it closed down due to COVID, and yet perhaps they were economically ready to part with the daycare preschool, even though it was one of the best in town. The list for reserving a spot for your child was pretty long. We had a park, Beale Park,
yeah.
right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's
there is housing right there too.
Yeah.
It would be a really beautiful project to take on and designate some mixed-use zoning.
I just think there's a lot of opportunity to reimagine that space.
Yeah, the senior center is a great venue.
Yep. Yeah. In terms of other things coming up, I would just in terms of other events, there will be, of course, another forum with the League of Women Voters, and that is on the 30th of October, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
October 30th. There is this Thursday, there's Forward Montana. There's an event at the university through Montpurg that is another forum from 6:30 to, I believe, 8:30 on October 18th.
Nice.
Yep.
Wow. So glad to have you here at the Gallatin Labor Temple this morning, Cindy Andrews. Thank you for supporting community radio.
Oh, you're welcome. I listen to it, and I believe it's an important part of our community. It's a great place to get information. And I appreciate the opportunity this morning to come and talk about some of my views as mayor and hopefully being reelected. I really appreciate the opportunity this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy.